afterwards Today Show. However, since taking over the 9 a.m. hour of the Today Show, 2.4 million viewers and episodes been the average, which is down 18% from what the hour was pulling a year before. And in fact, her hour in the critical morning time slot appears to be negatively impacting ratings for the following hour, which is hosted by Hoda Kotb and Kathy Lee Gifford. ABC's competing morning show, Live with Kelly and Ryan, has meanwhile enjoyed a ratings surge. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
USA Radio News.
The Senate confirmed Mike Pompeo to be the next Secretary of State today, ending one of the most divisive confirmation battles for the nation's top diplomatic job in recent memory. Senator John Barrasso is a fan of Pompeo.
I've traveled with Mike Pompeo to international security conferences. He knows the people. He knows the issues. He knows the role that military plays, but he's also a Harvard-educated lawyer, member of the law review there. So he knows the rule of law and the importance of doing that.
A Pennsylvania jury has found Bill Cosby guilty of three counts of aggravated indecent assault. Alex Little is a former prosecutor. He explains the difference between this case and the previous case.
It was the five women who were able to tell their stories of previous incidents of sexual assault. In a case like this where the defense is able to say, oh gosh, she's making it up, well, it's a lot harder to argue as a defense that all five women are making it up.
This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Hello. We are on Facebook Live today, believe it or not. And I didn't even get to play my music yet. So let's see if we can play that while I'm introducing the show. Because I always like to start with it. Let's see. There we go.
I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Now I have to remember that everybody can see me when I'm dancing. So maybe that's not such a good thing. All right. Now I have everybody's mics are now live. We are having a very special show today because Tog's already wrecking the joint. And can you get that back on there?
It. Yeah, I got it.
Perfect.
Sorry about that, guys.
We're all good. And it is Bring Your Child to Work Day, so we have some special visitors today. We are very, very lucky on this edition of Healthy Hunterdon. And today's show is going to be a very cool show. It's something that I have actually been interested in since I was a little girl. I had a science teacher in seventh grade who made us do a bug collection, which at first I thought was kind of gross. But then when we started collecting the bugs and seeing how cool they all are and how many there are and what they're all about, I just thought it was very cool. So from then on, I was very interested in bugs, believe it or not, Todd.
It goes back.
Yes, it does go back. So that's a little clue into today's show. Today we are going to talk about bugs. We're going to talk about all kinds of bugs. We're definitely going to focus on ticks and mosquitoes because those are the ones that we're all kind of worried about. But there are other bugs in Hunterdon County that we'll be talking about as well. So let me introduce Todd Rainey, and I'll have him introduce his children as well. So if he can just tell us a little bit about his background and what he does here in the county.
Sure, and thank you for having me, Kim. My name is Todd Rainey. I have been with the County Health Department for about 18 years now. I'm an entomologist by training, so I kind of came up through the mosquito and black fly and tick program. And evolved into managing our health department. So I oversee the insect program as well as the environmental health program, what we call preparedness group, and weights and measures, and the public health nurses.
Yeah. So a lot of those things that you mentioned, I never had any idea what those things were all about and how much you actually do kind of behind the scenes to make sure that the county residents are safe and that things are being handled appropriately. Like you mentioned the weights and measures, and I mean, I had no idea.
Yeah. So when you go get a gallon of gas, you want some sort of consumer protection to know they didn't give you half a gallon gas.
Exactly.
Same with when you go to say a deli, make sure you get a pound of lunch meat, right? Or in the one, it's always surprised me, never thought about it much, but in your pharmacy, to make sure if you wanted 100 pills, you got 100 pills. So
wow.
Make sure those things are calibrated.
See, I didn't
well.
Even know you did
yeah,
that
Yeah, so
well.
It's rather extensive, the work, and you'd never even know it. You just assume those things, sort of take them for granted. So
definitely.
Kind of interesting work. I found it to be interesting. It's fairly new to me just in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you guys do a lot of very varied things behind the scenes that if you weren't doing, we would know about, but because you're doing them, it's just kind of there and just happens,
yep.
And it's just kind of a streamlined, you know.
Sort of the nature
thing.
Of public health.
Yes.
A lot of preventative sort of things. We never really know how many lives you say or how many people don't end up in the hospital.
Yep.
But then, of course, if you have some sort of disease outbreak, we're right on that as well, trying to manage it.
Exactly. So it's great. You guys do a really good job. And you brought two friends with you today.
So these are two of the three kiddos in the Rainey household. You want to introduce yourself? Go ahead.
Go ahead. Talk into the microphone.
I am Valentina Rainey.
You are a natural. You're a natural Very radio lady over there. And who is this handsome gentleman over there?
Hey, I'm Vincent. I'm 9 years old, born 2008. I'm part of the Rainey family. And
I like it. He does a whole bio.
You guys
are amazing. Yeah, did you practice last night? Did Dad tell you were going to be on the radio?
Yes.
I mentioned my phone radio, yep.
They've been practicing. This is their big debut here. So while your dad and I are talking, if you guys have anything to say, you just kind of like raise your hand and I'll turn it over to you. Does that sound good?
That sounds good.
All right. And then I might have some questions for you.
Okay.
Because I bet living with your dad, you probably know something about bugs too.
What kind of bugs do you have as pets? What do we have?
Scorpion.
We have a scorpion.
Scorpion. What else?
Cockroach?
Yeah, cockroaches, yep. Cockroaches.
Because everybody has cockroaches for pets. and I'll just say that I visited your dad at his office or in the back area there, and I've seen his little pets there. Probably your friends as well. Scorpions, tarantulas.
Yep.
Definitely those big cockroaches, which were not too happy when we were disturbing them. I'm trying to remember what else you had. Lizards?
We did have lizards at some point. Yeah, we had a couple lizards. We don't have those anymore.
Yeah.
And we've got some odd things, tailless whip scorpions and whip scorpions. So
yeah.
A couple of oddballs there. But
very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we're going to get back on our subject because we can get off topic with all the fun stuff that you guys do over there. But today we definitely want to talk about bugs. And maybe we'll start with talking about ticks, because that's kind of it's funny that I have you on the show today. When I was coming into the office this morning, I was listening to New Jersey 101.5, and they were talking about the new tick that you discovered in Hunterdon County.
Yes, so kind of an interesting story. it's been all over the news recently. We resident had come into office last fall, had a larval tick and many of them on her. We just assumed at the time there were larval deer ticks because that would be normal to see that. We quickly noticed there were not. Lo and behold, it ends up being a non-native species, an exotic from East Asia, as it turns out. And this is quite the pest overseas, particularly in livestock. So since that point, we've wondered, is it going to make it through the winter? That's always a challenge with insects. Okay. They don't automatically make it. And just about a week and a half ago, we found this tick again with the help of my colleagues up at Rutgers University. And so that's bad news. It made it through the winter. Now, whether it becomes a problem or not, we don't know. Sometimes they don't translate necessarily. It might not be as big a problem here as you might see it overseas. Sometimes it can be as big a problem. So that's where we are right now. But since then, it's been found on a couple different properties, including out in Union County, actually. So and those, we've done a little genetics work on those, thanks to my colleague in Monmouth County, and they're the same strain, if you will. So it's probably, it could very well be from the same introduction, and we'll probably go back retrospectively and, I won't say pinpoint exactly when that introduction was, but it may have been here for more than a year.
So probably what people are wondering about is, does that particular tick bring about any kind of disease?
Good question. So what we start doing with all these ticks and other insects, for that matter, is we look at what they transmit overseas. And they do. They are involved in some human diseases. The good news is, all the ticks we've collected so far, we've tested and we've found nothing.
Okay.
The other good news is these diseases that are transmitted seem to be fairly rare, as opposed to, say, something like Lyme disease and that sort of thing, which is really common here. So my guess on the human front is we will not see a lot of disease activity. Right now, the concern is more related to animals, either livestock or wildlife. And wildlife's an interesting one because in my line of work, we don't normally take wildlife into consideration. We don't look at wildlife. We don't think much about their populations.
Okay.
But there is some concern that this could affect wildlife populations, and that would be unfortunate, obviously, if it did. But right now, those are the primary concern are more than likely animal-related as opposed to human-related.
Okay, which maybe could have an impact on our farming community?
Yes, yeah, that's a big thing out here, us, Warren County, Sussex in particular. So, for example, what does this tick do overseas? Well, it can kill animals with blood loss alone. That's a little bit unusual, but it's so aggressive. Yeah, it can do that. The other thing it can do, and this is a more common problem, is it can affect, say, for example, dairy cows' ability to produce milk, perhaps 25% less milk production in a cow that's affected with these ticks. So that's usually what we see is some sort of morbidity sort of problem with animals.
Okay.
But, yes, this particular tick has been so aggressive, it's been documented to actually take down an animal through blood loss alone.
Wow.
Which is impressive.
Not
in a good way.
Scary.
Yeah.
Geez, I've never gotten a phone call while we're on the show. I'm assuming that's not for me. Maybe it's for you. No.
Valentina?
No, we'll just let it go. Let me look at my time here because we got... All right, I have 2 minutes before I got to take a commercial. I got to make sure I do my commercial.
Got to fill the bills, as they say.
Yeah, or I'll be in big trouble. So can you just talk a little bit about... We kind of jumped into ticks, but... What is the lifespan of a tick? Like, how does it start off?
So, yeah, let's start with the normal ticks,
yeah.
The native species. Ticks are unusual in the sense that they typically have about a two-year life cycle. And we'll just use our common deer tick or the synonym for that is a black-legged tick. They essentially go through a two-year cycle. And what interests us most is the nymphal stage because that's the one that's so directly correlated with disease. And this is very good timing because we're going to see that tick very soon. So one of our health messages to people is if you're going to be vigilant about doing any tick control, tick checks, taking ticks off of you, if you can do that between mid-May and, say, mid-July, you're reducing your risk of contracting a lot of these domestic diseases. And the big ones, Lyme disease, we see some others as well. So all ticks go through this.
I just want to clarify that because I never knew that. So you're saying that the earlier ticks or the younger ticks typically – may not be carrying the disease until later on in the season?
So what happens is in this two-year cycle, let's just break the cycle. We'll start last August. We've had female ticks lay eggs. The eggs have hatched. They're now larvae. Larvae have no disease in them. They've had no blood. And they can feed on you. They typically do not. But if they do, there's no risk at all.
Okay.
Once those larvae do feed, and they usually feed on small mammals.
Do they just look like smaller versions of ticks?
Yeah, it's just like a mini version of a regular tick. Well, I should say the big exception is all larval ticks have 6 legs instead of 8 legs, which is kind of interesting. They molt and gain 2 legs. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's really easy to tell apart from other ticks.
Okay.
But basically, the larvae tend to feed on small vermin, white-footed mouse, maybe birds, that kind of thing. Now, what they do in doing that is they'll pick up disease. So when they molt, so they use that blood as food, as energy to molt. Now they're nymphs. Those nymphs over winter, that's what's going to start showing up about now, but really they're going to peak right around June 1st.
Okay.
And they'll start to fade and fade by about early July. So because those ticks have taken a blood meal, potentially from a reservoir, an animal that contains disease, they might very well have disease. So if they bite again as a nymph, that's when you can get disease. So it's kind of a paradox. Although those ticks aren't severely infected with disease, maybe one in five, as opposed to the adult ticks, which are about one in two, most of the disease actually is transmitted by the nymphal stage. And the reason is they're so much more abundant. They don't bite as aggressively, so you don't feel them. And so about somewhere around 90% to 95% of our Lyme disease is actually contracted during the time we see nymphal deer ticks out in the
wow.
wild.
That's very interesting. Now, do the nymphs stay on? I know a tick, you know, sometimes can stay on you. Do the nymphs do the same thing?
So not quite as long, maybe 3 to 4 days, as opposed to an adult deer tick, which can be that, you know, 5 to 7 day period.
Wow.
Usually the rule of thumb is it takes a good 36 to 48 hours to really transmit these bacterial parasites. That does not hold true for the viral parasites.
Okay.
We don't have many of those, but Powassan virus is one.
Okay.
So the good news is, and one of our public health messages is, if you can get that tick off right away, high probability, even if it had disease in it, that you're not going to get the disease itself.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, if nobody listens to any other part of the talk today, that's the part that I hope they listen to.
You have to take off as soon as possible.
Yeah. Right. You have to be vigilant about checking yourself, checking your kids, checking your animals when they come into the house, because if you can get those ticks off early.
And I'll just give an example between Vincent and Valentina and their brother, Tim. Around June 1st was around our peak last year. I pulled off about a dozen nymphal deer ticks from them.
Wow.
It turns out we had them out near the playset in the backyard, and nobody came down with Lyme disease last year. That's a lot of ticks, a dozen ticks. But we got them all off in time. One actually ended up being engorged, and I looked, and this is my son, Tim. I said, well, he's got about a 1 in 5 shot of even having the potential to get the parasite in him. And do you even get enough of the parasite in him? It turns out none of that was true, and he ended up with no Lyme disease at all.
Okay. All right.
So that's a big deal.
So when you're checking for ticks, just kind of go through how you think the best effective way for checking for ticks.
So usually the interesting thing about deer ticks is they tend to be lower in the column of grass, if you will. So your dog ticks tend to be a little bit higher. They tend to migrate higher in your body. Deer ticks tend to be fairly low. So for adults like ourselves, it's unusual to get deer ticks above your waist. So usually, even if you focus on, say, your thighs down, ticks love to be in dark areas of the body, so between your toes, behind your knees, that kind of thing. They're going to take advantage of wherever they can get under your clothing, so between your shoes and your pants, at your waist, that kind of thing. If you're gardening, well, now all of a sudden you're low to the ground, so it's more likely to get them on your arms and that kind of thing, and they will move up. But particularly with children, like my kids, I'm going to check pretty much their whole body because they're so low to the ground as it is. And what's interesting, and you'll hear this from a lot of people about ticks, is you'll have them on you, not even notice. You'll look for ticks, and then wake up the next morning, and it's on your wrist. And you're wondering, how in the world did they get there? They're amazing. They can withstand a shower at night. They're very adept at clinging to you. They tend to like to wander around a little bit before they actually embed themselves.
I'm getting itchy.
Yeah, not uncommon at all.
You guys getting itchy?
Yeah, not at all.
They're
uncommon.
Used to it.
Yeah, to have a tick, you know, starts engorging itself, you know, 12 to 24 hours after it's actually been on you. That's pretty common, actually. So the good news is you got a window there. So if you're outside a lot, like, for example, kids are outside today at the parks, we're probably going to take a look tonight.
Yeah.
Probably take a look tomorrow and just keep an eye on them. And usually in your belly button's a classic area for kids.
Oh.
And then, of course, once you get an embedded tick on you, and we can tell to some degree how long they've been on you, we want to keep an eye out for symptoms of things like Lyme disease and anaplasmosis and fevers, rashes. Those are the type of things that are pretty a common theme with these tick-borne diseases.
Yeah, yeah. That's very interesting. And the belly button.
Yeah, that's where Tim had a couple last year. Yep. It's dark, a bit moist, perfect spot. Between the toes is a classic. And once you see one for a few days, you look at it like, how did I not see that before?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens is, you know, ticks are funny. They're kind of like, if you can imagine, it's like a siphon where you're pulling air through something, and as soon as the water comes through, all of a sudden it kind of explodes. Very similar to a tick. It's pulling, and all of a sudden the blood starts to rush in. So after about 36, 48 hours, all of a sudden it starts to balloon very quickly.
Wow. And you also brought up another point that I want to just highlight a little bit, which is you said you check them the first night, and then you check them the second night. Because I know with my kids – when they were little. I would check them when they come in, and I'm like, all right, you're good.
Probably
but
not
you're saying...
Fine. Yeah, you got to give them a chance to... It's just amazing how they can hide on your body. And I can't tell you how many people I've run into had Lyme disease, have never saw the tick, have no idea how they got it. And we know with certainty that it's transmitted through the bite of a tick.
Right.
Yeah, it's not even debatable anymore. So, yeah, believe it or not, you had a tick on you.
Check multiple times. Yep. It's a good thing you guys have a good dad.
Although check Vince, that. I should say, Vince had Lyme disease when he was 5. And it was around October. Right around Halloween, we were running around in some of those, the fields with for the kids. They put the hail bales and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Woke up the next day and he couldn't walk. And I thought, my goodness, did he like tear an ACL or
oh
something?
My
Can
God.
You do that 5 years old? So I went to the doctor. She looked at him and said, oh, he's got Lyme disease. And then sure enough, we put our hand on his knee. It was hot and he had this swollen. And I'm like, wow, how come I didn't notice that? And we missed the tick. That tick had been on probably 8 to 9 weeks ago or something like that. So, so here I am. I should be looking for this, and I missed it myself.
Yeah.
So,
well, that just goes to show how you have to be really vigilant.
Very much so.
So we're talking about once the tick is on you already. But let's talk about what you can do to try to prevent, getting the exposure. So what do you recommend for that as far as what you dress and
yeah,
all
several
stuff?
Things. We always say it's better to have light-colored clothing on than dark-colored clothing on. Now, that's a tough one, especially with kids. You're going to put them on whatever they want to wear. It's non-negotiable, by the way. They will tell you what they're going to wear.
And then they'll be a dirty mess.
Yeah. So, there are repellents. Some work very well. Some do not. That's something you can do. There's things you can do in your yard to maintain your yard, to reduce the harborage, reduce the habitat. Then, if you can take that a step further, you can actually do tick control in your yard, caricide treatments, as we call them. And the way I look at this, it's like it's called a risk cup, where if you do nothing, your risk of Lyme disease is here.
Okay.
Every time you do something, you're lowering that risk. If you do all these things, there's probably some synergistic effect there where now you reduce your risk substantially. So that's the idea.
So I think we have a comment over here. What would
you
like to say?
Are you going to ask us any more questions?
Would you like me to? Okay.
You want to take a break and then... commercial break or go back there?
4:22. Well, now I'm off schedule because I already missed a break.
There you go. So we'll keep going.
So we'll just keep going. At 4:30, then we'll take a break, okay? All right. So tell me, what is something that you can tell us about ticks or how to prevent getting ticks from a kid's perspective?
Well, ticks could be in the woods if you go in the woods, if you were hiking.
So you got to be careful where you walk,
point.
Right? So if you're in the woods, then we got to remember, aha, I was in the woods today. I better check.
That's a very good point. Where else do ticks like to hide out? Do you know? What do you think?
How about in our yard? Remember by the swing set? It was right. I call it the edge habitat. It's where your manicured lawn hits the woods, where we don't weed whack as much. It starts, it's got shaded areas. So deer ticks, they do not do well in dry heat. So on your front lawn, they're not going to survive. Even if they drop off, they're just not going to survive.
Oh, that's good.
As soon as you get into that edge habitat, the grass starts to grow, the weeds, you're getting the shade. That's where you're going to find your deer ticks. So most of your deer ticks are going to be in that transition area. You do get some in the woods, but really that transition, that edge area. So if you decide, aha, I'm going to try to kill the ticks in my yard, you can maintain that. You can mow that down quite a bit. That'll help. Then if you couple that with an acaricide, especially if you time it right, when the nymphs are around, you're liable to kill 95% of your ticks, and you can reduce, even with deer coming in and out. By the way, people always ask, well, what role do deer play?
Yeah.
They're what we call the maintenance hosts. They move ticks around. They don't play a role in the disease cycle. That's your mouse, your reservoir, as we call them. But they're going to serve things around. So even if you got rid of all the deer, they're just going to switch to another host. Raccoons, whatever, will move them around. But particularly, we've got animals coming in and out. That's a great place to look for ticks.
Yeah, so I often wonder, we get a lot of deer in our backyard because we have woods. So we have lawn, and then, like you said, small amount of brush, and then the woods. So if they're laying around my yard, probably their ticks are falling off of.
Well, that'd be a good place to look. Ticks tend to be around their hosts or potential hosts.
Yes.
And speaking of ticks, I also did have a tick on my head, and I almost got Lyme disease.
Oh, we pulled one off. Pulled an adult deer tick off. And this is another thing. You got to pay attention like anything else. Valentina told me for a day or so she had a lump on her head, basically. I thought it was a scab.
Okay.
And sure enough, I think we were taking a nap one day, and I said, I'll deal with this when we wake up. And I looked, I'm like, oh, my goodness, it's an engorged adult deer tick. Now, had I been paying attention, I would have taken this off the night before.
Yeah.
And luckily, we took it off and no problems. But that was smack dab.
Now, can you test them? Like,
so, yeah,
yourself?
People often ask, is it worth testing a tick? Yeah. Here's what I usually say is, there's very little value in actually testing a tick for disease because we already know what the probability is that it has it.
Okay.
The other thing is
you're
that
saying, you said before 1 in 2? Is that
1 in 2
of
the adult ear ticks? About 44 to 50% somewhere in there.
Mm. It's pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty high. So we know it's a 50-50 shot it's going to have disease, but it doesn't mean it can transmit it to you. The other thing is, you know, if the test doesn't go well, you could get a false negative, and now you've given yourself a sense of security that I don't have Lyme disease, when in fact you could. So really what most doctors recommend is you keep an eye out for the symptoms for about 30 days. That's about the window with Lyme and a lot of these other bacterial parasites. So what we did was we marked on the calendar, and we found that tick, and now we're looking, are you getting fevers, rash, these achy joints, that kind of thing. Most people, you know, 97% of the people who get Lyme disease are going to have some significant symptoms. Some will not. And those are the unfortunate ones where you can get this sort of the later stage Lyme that you miss. But yeah, we saw nothing, and she's been fine ever since. And that was probably, I forgot about that, about 2 months ago, probably about a month and a half ago.
Wow.
So ticks can be active in the cold weather as well. Very opportunistic. If it gets above freezing and you're walking by them, they'll come on to you, basically.
Interesting. So as far as taking ticks off of you, what is the recommended way to remove them from your skin?
And you'll read a lot on the internet of various concoctions,
yes,
or
you
whatever.
Will.
I joke around. I remember as a child my father burning them off. He denies this,
oh,
by
my
the
goodness.
Way. But I'm pretty
the
sure
torch?
He did. I remember the match just sitting there, you know, sitting there. But anyway, the way to do it is nice, fine pair of forceps. They're hard to find, but if you can find a nice pair of forceps, you anchor it right to the base where it's in and pull straight up. If you want to give it a quarter turn twist, that might help. Ticks, their jaws, for lack of a better word, are like shark's teeth where they go in and basically expand. So they're anchored in. Don't hesitate to pull the skin with it. I know it's not terribly comfortable, but they will come out. Patch that up with a little Neosporin so you don't get a secondary infection, and that's the way to do it. You don't need anything else.
Wow.
That's exactly the way to do it.
Okay. That makes sense. Would you like to add to that? You had your hand up.
Were you scared when we removed that tick? Was it scary or no? Not too bad?
Not really.
I have to say that, as you know, I'm a registered nurse, and when we first moved into our neighborhood, my doorbell would ring all the time with different people with different ailments, and frequently it was a tick that they wanted removed from some part of their kid's body.
I just came from a meeting yesterday where the state health department gave a report on the amount of people that go to the emergency room for tick bites.
My goodness.
It was astonishing. And actually, Hunterdon was good. We were one of the so-called
lesser.
Well,
I think people here are somewhat used to it, you know.
But I was shocked to see how many people went to the emergency room percentage-wise for a tick bite.
Yes. Yes?
And Daddy got us this tick remover. So
we
have any.
We're trying out. It's a company calls it. It's called a tick key, and it's really neat. It's a flat piece of metal, basically, and you put over the tick, and it gradually constricts, and it appears to pull the tick off. Now, we haven't tried it out with really small ticks, but it appears to work for adult ticks. So kind of nifty little thing. And I brought a few home for the kids to try out, and kind of hoping we don't have to try them out. But I've tried out a couple of larger ticks, and they seem to do pretty well with it. Yeah, it's hard to describe, but basically you put it over this, and you pull, and it gradually shortens to the point where it pinches the tick, basically, and pulls it right off.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. I think it is time, since I forgot the last break. I don't want to get in too much trouble. So we're going to go to a news break.
USA Radio News.
The Senate confirmed Mike Pompeo to be the next Secretary of State today, ending one of the most divisive confirmation battles for the nation's top diplomatic job in recent memory. Senator John Barrasso is a fan of Pompeo.
I've traveled with Mike Pompeo to international security conferences. He knows the people. He knows the issues. He knows the role that military plays, but he's also a Harvard-educated lawyer, member of the law review there. So he knows the rule of law and the importance of doing that.
A Pennsylvania jury has found Bill Cosby guilty of 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault. Alex Little is a former prosecutor. He explains the difference between this case and the previous case.
It was the 5 women who were able to tell their stories of previous incidents of sexual assault. In a case like this where the defense is able to say, oh gosh, she's making it up, well, it's a lot harder to argue as a defense that all 5 women are making it up.
This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? fish oil, or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
So I like to do my look out the window weather report, which is, it is sunny. Woohoo! We are finally getting a little bit of sunshine, a little bit of warmth. Are you guys liking it? How about you, Vince? Do you like to play outside?
Yeah, pretty fun.
Pretty fun. It's better when it's sunny, right?
Yeah, better than rainy at least.
Better than rainy. And I just heard that you play baseball.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sport?
I like baseball.
Like baseball?
What else do you play?
Football. That's it.
How about the one in the winter? That's your big one.
Oh, wrestling.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Oh.
That's it.
Had a good season last year.
I have a friend who's a wrestler. It's my friend's son wrestles, and he is seventh in the state in his weight class. I'm not sure what division and all that, but he's doing really well, and people are asking him to come and, you know, compete in different places
in the
state.
Yeah, that's great.
So, and I grew up in South Plainfield, and if your dad is a big
South
wrestling
high school
wrestling fan, we were, I think we were number one in the state back a long time ago.
Not
when
too
I was
long
there.
Ago. Yeah,
well, they probably still are very good in wrestling, but our football team, not so much, but our wrestlers always did very well, so... well, I hope it continues to be sunny for your baseball games.
Thank you.
And you'll wear
it was
your
snowing
sunscreen.
Snowing last week, I think.
What's that?
I think it was snowing last week at one of your
practices. Yeah, probably. And your dad will remind you to wear your sunscreen, right?
That's right.
All right. So we talked a bit about ticks and how to remove ticks and what we should wear outside to help identify or keep them off of us. I want to move now to... to mosquitoes. Those pesky little bugs. And at first, I'll tell you a story, which I know I've told you, but we'll mention it just in case anybody else sees these things. But when I first moved here, I guess it was the first summer or spring, and I walked outside. It was during the day, and I saw these bugs that appeared to me at the time to look like mosquitoes, but they were flying all over the place in your face, and they were really big looking mosquitoes, but they were
crane flies.
They
I
were
remember
crane
this.
Flies.
Yeah, I remember this.
And I remember I actually called the town.
Is that
because
right?
I was like, there's a problem here in my neighborhood. And they were actually crane flies, which you told me are
close related mosquitoes,
you.
But they do not bite. They're unable to bite other mouth parts, and those larvae are, they can either be aquatic and they live in the benthos, you know, underneath kind of a stream bed, or can live in areas that are a little damp in lawns and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, but yeah, completely harmless. And kind of towards the fall, what happens is they're mating at the end of the season. So if you walk through them, they'll flutter up all over you. And of course, during the summertime, if you flick on your porch light, you'll see them come up and they're dancing all over. And if should you touch them, they'll drop a leg or two. That's their defensive mechanism.
Really?
Yeah, they'll lose a leg if you try to pick them up. Yeah, but completely harmless. But they look like giant mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, growing up, they think, oh, those are the female mosquitoes or something. That's what you hear a lot. So.
Yeah, so it's just good to know living in the county that you might experience. And this was during the day, which typically you wouldn't see
the mosquitoes. I don't remember. Was it around August, September, somewhere in there?
I remember it was nice outside. It was sunny. So it could have been early fall.
That's when they're really starting
summer.
To mate and then putting their eggs in the ground.
They're
going to die off. And particularly around the time when you'll see a frost in the morning. They'll be very inactive, and as soon as it warms up a little, they all come up out of the ground, basically.
Yeah, so that must have been it. But anyway, so that was my mistaken identity. But getting to mosquitoes. So mosquitoes obviously is something that's annoying for people, but they can also carry disease too. So can you talk a little bit about the mosquito activity in the county?
Sure. And so just a little bit of background. We've got, let's call it 65 mosquito species in the state. We've got 40-something here in Hunter, and the ones we're missing are typically your salt marsh mosquitoes, or I call them the sort of the like Canadian mosquitoes, the ones that come down just to Sussex County and not very much further. So we've got sort of that in-between group. Of those 40-some, there's really only a handful that really cause either nuisance activity or disease activity. So part of our job is to go around, surveil for these, kill the ones that are in high populations that could cause a problem, and then leave the rest alone. We've actually got some beneficial mosquitoes out there, too, that don't even feed as adults. They're actually predaceous as larvae. They get enough protein, whereas adults, they mate and produce eggs and basically die, but they never bite you. So we've got kind of a group here, very selective with their habitats. Female mosquitoes, some will lay their eggs in what we call containers only, debris that's on the ground. It could be a tree hole, a natural container. They will not lay their eggs anywhere else. Others have to lay their eggs in permanent water, swamps, that kind of thing, which never dry down. Yet others lay their eggs in areas that dry down completely and then reflood. We call those floodwater mosquitoes.
Okay.
Those are the ones, historically, you would know this going down the Jersey Shore, where you go down one weekend, there's nothing, you go down the next weekend, and you're bombarded with mosquitoes. They're a brood. So something got flooded, probably by a lunar tide, produced mosquitoes all the same age cohort. They all merged at once, and they're all blood feeding at once. And I should back up and say, it is the females only that will blood feed. And the reason is they're using that blood for egg production only, not for nutrition.
Yeah, I was very interested to find that out because everybody thinks they're like feeding on you.
Nope, they're actually, and you can literally, we've had in graduate school, we have mosquitoes in colony where you could not feed them blood. They become very aggressive because they're tuned into wanting blood, but they'll survive on carbohydrates. And that mosquitoes, that's what they do, is they feed on nectar basically.
Okay.
All the time. And then they simply, what happens is they're hormonally triggered to seek blood to produce eggs, but you can actually allow them to survive without blood if you have them in a cage.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, kind of.
Do we know why mosquitoes like some people more than they like other people?
My running joke I tell everybody is, when I find out, you'll know, because I will patent it.
I know.
Formula, and I'll be dropping them from my Ferrari.
I think I told you that I'm one of those people that mosquitoes, I very rarely get a mosquito bite.
Very similar. They're mosquitoes hone in on a few things. Carbon dioxide, your exhaled breath is one. Lactic acid production. And then the secret formula is the volatiles that your body produces, which are different depending on the person. And it's very similar for other insects as well. The same holds true to some degree for ticks. The same holds true to some degree for bed bugs. Bed bugs are the classic where you can literally have husband and wife sleep in the same bed. One gets hammered by bed bugs and one gets nothing at all. And we see that quite a bit. So, yeah, there's a secret sort of concoction that draws a mosquito into one person more than the other. But you would think with all the advanced technology, gas chromatograms, and look at this sort of stuff, no one's ever really figured it out.
I know. So if you want to take some of my blood and figure out what it is, then we can both get Ferraris.
That's right.
How's that sound?
We'll know when we patent the secret formula, because that will make the ultimate repellent.
It really would. I mean, there has to be something to that. You know, we have to find someone with $1 zillion to fund our research.
The technology, you would think by now we know that, and we simply don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And do you have something to add to that? What do you want to say?
And also, I don't know why, but some mosquitoes like me in the summer day bite me a lot.
Yeah, yep. So you're one that they like.
Yeah, you're like me.
You must be extra sweet.
Oh, she gets the welts, too, from the bite.
Yeah, my daughter,
that's the other thing, too. So you've got this other half of this, which is your body's response. It's a histamine response like other things. Some people swell up, get really itchy. Other people, you get a bite and it goes away. Very similar to bed bugs as well.
It is very bizarre. How about you, Vince? What happens when you get a mosquito bite?
I start to react bad.
Yeah, you do.
And you get
a big welt.
Yeah, it get related to, so he's a little allergic to wasps and hornets. And sometimes when you get those reactions to other insect bites, they carry over.
Okay.
And so that can change throughout your life as well.
That's interesting. Okay, so we don't want to get mosquito bites. So how can we try to prevent mosquito bites? There's so much information out there. As I was telling you earlier before we started taping, that somebody in my office said, well, what about peppermint oil? And somebody else was yelling, well, what about this? And what about that? So what's the real deal?
So The interesting thing is repellents work in a variety of ways. The DEET-based repellents, which have now been the standard as a decent repellent for years, those actually work by they don't allow the mosquito the ability to land. They interfere mm-hmm. with its ability to land. So you can do a little experiment with your cutter or off your DEET-based repellents. You can spray them on your hand, put a latex glove on, a nitrile glove, cut a hole in it, and a mosquito will land on the glove and they'll feed right where the DEET is. If you take that glove off, they will not be able to land on you. And you'll notice if you ever use those products, you'll see them kind of hover. They can't figure out. It interferes with their landing gear, basically. There are other repellents that act as more traditional type repellents where mosquitoes just don't like to be around them. So usually what I say is what we know works are these DEET repellents. There's a couple other novel ones now. People like natural stuff. Picaridin is one of those. And eucalyptus oil is another. Now, there is a restriction on eucalyptus oil for expecting mothers that potentially can cross the placenta, so you want to be careful there.
Okay.
What we then see is a cottage industry of a lot of other things. As we grew up, it was Skin So Soft, right? Mm-hmm. Actually has some repellency. It actually works for a little while, not as long as DEET. Then there's a lot of other things that really don't work at all and have shown some sort of basic repellency, like citronella oil is an example. You need so much citronella oil to repel a mosquito, you'd probably pass out by the time you're
so sticking that candle in the middle of your picnic table.
Yeah, it doesn't do a whole lot.
Yeah, we're all doing it, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of others that have shown some repellency in the lab that don't transmit or translate to the field. For example, garlic and peppermint oil is another
one.
So, and what I always mention, too, is sometimes like things like synthetic chemicals like DEET get sort of a bad rap because they're synthetic. But bear in mind that your exposure is really what matters at the end of the day. So even if you had something that had some repellency that was natural but used tons of it, mm-hmm. it probably wouldn't be very healthy for you. So I always say if you want something that works, DEET's a great product. Use it on your clothing, can use it on your skin. There are things like permethrin. There's synthetic pyrethroids for clothing only that do work to repel, but you can't use them on your skin. So you want to be careful with some of those.
What do you think?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Where do mosquitoes go for the winter?
Oh, that's a good question.
So, depends on the mosquito. So, of these species we have, some will overwinter as eggs. And that seems hard to believe, but they'll survive. You could have a glacier run through Hunterdon County, and they will survive the winter and pop out like they always do. And we're seeing those mosquitoes right now in the water. In this cold water, they're actually going to emerge out. And they're about maybe a week or so behind just because they got slowed down even in the hatch on time. Then there's another set that overwinter as adults. They've mated as females. The males have died, and they spend the winter as adults. And what they do is they're typically underground, your culverts. So if we went, and we've done this before, if you go down and say the storm drains of the town here, mm-hmm. you're liable to find those mosquitoes, and they then emerge out. And we'll see this in our house. Every now and then you see a mosquito in February come out. There's a few of the Anopheles do that over the winter. They love overwintering in people's homes. Now, since they're mated females, they're actively seeking a blood meal. So they can actually bite you at night in the middle of February, and you'll wake up with a bite. Like, how did I get that? And then you might find this mosquito flying around your bathroom. We saw that actually in our house.
That's funny that you say that, because occasionally, you know, over the last 10 years or whatever, my daughter will say, oh, I got bit by something.
Yep, probably a mosquito that was coming out from overwintering. Yeah,
you know, I wasn't thinking mosquito at all.
And they typically, between the eggs and the females, they're typically triggered by two things. One is photoperiod. So they can recognize the day lengths that are getting longer. The other is temperature, and sometimes a little combination of both. In the case of mosquitoes overwinter as eggs, they're also driven by dissolved oxygen in the water. So when those things hit a threshold, that triggers them to hatch, and off they go. And the third theoretical way they could overwinter is as larvae or pupae. We see that with two species in New Jersey, both of which we haven't hunted in, but they're very rare. They're very common in Cape May County and in Sussex, believe it or not, but very rare here. So it's most commonly we see overwintering as eggs or as mated females.
Yeah. Okay.
Good question.
So what time of the day should we be worrying about mosquitoes? Because typically it doesn't seem like the middle of the day.
Yeah. Good question. So there's one mosquito in New Jersey, and we have it here in Hunterdon from about, now let's say Clinton South. I do not have it in Holland Township. It's known as the Asian tiger mosquito. It's an import. That's one of the few daytime biting mosquitoes.
Okay.
And you'll note it's a very vibrant white and black mosquito. And you'll actually, it's an ankle biter. It'll be in your ankles. You'll see that. We won't see it here in Hunterdon until probably July. It peaks about August. Can be very aggressive for about a month and it fades. Most other mosquitoes that are human pests are what we call crepuscular feeders. Either right before dusk, right around dusk, or right around dawn. and most of ours tend to be around dusk. Now, what happens as the daylight shortens, if those mosquitoes are around, they can start biting around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon because the temperatures are getting cold and they know dusk is coming, so they can shift their feeding a little bit.
Okay.
But it's not terribly common for mosquitoes to bite in the middle of the night, with the exception of the Anopheles mosquitoes. And those are the mosquitoes that notoriously bite you while you're camping. They'll actually get into a tent. I should say some mosquitoes are very claustrophobic. There's some mosquitoes, if they come inside, they will not bite. There are others
really?
That are very tuned into doing that. And those are notoriously some of your Anopheles mosquitoes. Love to get in a tent, for example, and bite.
That is so strange. What do you think, Valentina?
How do mosquitoes stay alive?
Well, so they need food. If they dry out, they'll die, so they need some moisture. But your typical mosquito, adult mosquito, will live no more than a month. And usually what happens is so the males die fairly quickly. They mate and don't live long.
Okay.
Several days, maybe a week. The female mosquitoes end up dying by exhaustion, by producing so many eggs. They're spent and they basically die from that. So usually a female mosquito can produce 2 to 3 broods, and by then she just can't produce any more and she dies basically of natural causes. So usually, as a rule of thumb, adult mosquitoes can live for about a month or so. We have one of our pest species in Hunter that we don't see every year can live about 8 to 10 weeks. And that's one that really drives people crazy, because if they have a problem with it, it persists for quite a amount of time.
So what are some things that people can do around their own home environment to try to eliminate or at least decrease the number of mosquitoes in their area?
So the big thing is mosquito larvae need water to survive.
Okay.
Some persist in this container habitat, and those are the ones that the homeowner can really address. So I always say there's a lot of things on the county end. We'll take care of the swamps. You can't do anything about those. You're going to have water in those or not, and we will come out and kill mosquitoes in those habitats. What we can ask the homeowner to do, and we can help out as well, is what we call source reduction. That is getting rid of these habitats around your home. And I'm just as guilty, but if I go out in my backyard, I'm sure there's a few kids' toys that have picked up some water from the recent rains. I got to remember to get rid of those, throw the stuff out. Or in case of a bird bath, just dump it out once a week.
Right.
You got an ornamental pond, we can give you some mosquito fish to kill those mosquitoes that are in there year-round. So there's some things we can provide as well. But we look at this as a sort of a 50-50 partnership where you can take care of the stuff around the home. We can help you with that.
Right.
That gets rid of some. We'll take care of the stuff that you can't take care of. And then between those two, we can really reduce those mosquito numbers.
That's great. All right. We're going to take a little break, and we will be back with Healthy Hunterdon.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client
communication. You could be sitting over here doing the interview. I could go
home. Your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good. I got you.
All right. And we are back. I can't believe we only have about 8 minutes left in the show. This is going so fast. And there's just such useful information, which is wonderful. So I know that we had talked about, or you had wanted to talk about the tick collection that's going on in Hunterdon. So let's talk about that.
We have residents who bring ticks to us all the time, and that's a very valuable service, I think, because we can tell them what they are, what their risks of exposure to disease and that kind of thing. It's particularly important now because we have this invasive tick, and we're trying to get a sense of where this tick is. So we're actively soliciting ticks. So if people have them on their animals, they find ticks in their yard or whatever, you're welcome to put in a little bottle, put in a little plastic bag, get it to our office, and we'll, first of all, we'll ID it and then give you some sense of what you have. But that would help us really get a grasp on the movement and distribution, particularly of this new tick. Now, the other thing I should say is we've had interest in this before because one of the things we're seeing is we're seeing increased cases of ehrlichiosis. That disease is almost always tied into the Lone Star tick. Now, Lone Star ticks are something you see down in the Pine Barrens, not up here. And we're wondering, that tick has been moving around. Do we have that tick in higher abundance than we think in Hunterdon? So we're actively soliciting ticks for a lot of reasons, but we'd be delighted. People will give us more and more ticks. The more the merrier, basically.
So if they're getting these ticks, how do they, like, I mean, if they squash them, can you still
bring them in?
Identify?
Yep. What possibly they can, are. Yep. As long as we have some body parts, we're usually pretty good there. Usually I like to say bring them in some sort of little vial so they don't get crushed. Notoriously what people do is they put them under a piece of tape. The problem we have with that is we can't see a lot of the body parts. So
okay.
Just a little plastic baggie, a little vial that you have lying around.
Oh, like a little Ziploc maybe.
A little Ziploc bag. You can always preserve them in alcohol. We use ethanol, but if you have isopropyl alcohol on the shelf, put them right in there. If you're nervous about having them in your house, you can always freeze them. A lot of people don't like to have ticks lying around overnight and they might escape, that kind of thing. So but yeah, if you can get them to us one way or the other, we'd be thrilled to get a better sense of what's going on there. We're actually participating in something called a tick blitz with the state, and all counties in the state will be collecting ticks on May 10th with the idea that we're going to get a snapshot of what's going on statewide. And the reason for that is we're seeing movement in these native species, and now we've got this invasive as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. And since you brought up the state, maybe we'll talk for a second about the commission that you and I are both attend meetings for. There is a state mosquito commission, believe it or not. Again, another service that's paid from our tax dollars that that if it wasn't there, you would definitely know.
You know it, yeah. And
but so can you just talk a little bit about what the commission does? And
serves several roles. But for example, if we have a disease outbreak or something, they're there to help support county governments in mosquito control and surveillance efforts. So they serve as a mechanism, as a quality control mechanism, to make sure that every county is up to a certain level in the service they provide to their constituents. And then should there be a problem that the county can't typically handle, they come in to help out with resources we couldn't normally get a hold of. And we've gone through that ourselves, where we've made supplemental requests for equipment and otherwise. And they've come in and they said, okay, let's see what you've got. We'll evaluate your program to see what the need is. They will also, they serve a role to communicate with the political establishment within a county to make sure that the citizens are getting the quality of services they deserve. So it's a really neat group. I try to attend their meetings periodically because I'd like to see what's going on elsewhere in the state. And the commission has these ex officio members from the Department of Health, Department of Agriculture, the experiment station. They've got these public members that serve to let it be known what's going on in their neck of the woods, particularly in areas of the state that aren't well represented otherwise.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with this group, and as you know, I'm sort of waiting for my commission appointment. So that's very exciting for me as somebody who's representing healthcare for hopefully the Mosquito Commission in the future. But I've been attending the meetings as well for the past 9 months or so, and it's been so very interesting and eye-opening to me to see how much behind-the-scenes work goes on in the state of New Jersey and all of the different counties to keep us safer. But not only that, but the research going on.
Yeah, that's why they've got a great connection historically to the state experiment station, and that's the mission through the Land Grant University, their state experiment station, is to provide practical entomology, in this case mosquito services, to the constituents of New Jersey, to all the residents.
Yeah.
And that requires some basic research and development when it comes to insecticides, repellents. They've been at the forefront of that for decades now. So it's constantly changing. It's constantly evolving. And even in tough times, they're still doing the work. So I've been thrilled. I mean, I've been part of this now for 20-some years.
Yeah.
I came through that as a graduate student. I was on some funding that came through the State Commission that helped me get through graduate school. And we were out there in counties collecting mosquitoes, testing them for eastern equine encephalitis, that kind of thing, providing that information, that data, to the county so they can make control decisions. So it's a very useful tool.
Yeah. The other thing that I really love about that group is that they're very vigilant with the monies that they receive and how they use them. I think they, you know, they use their budget as if it's, you know, their own money that they personally earned, which I love, because a lot of times there's complaints about, you know,
you see the waste, how, isn't that? Yeah.
Yeah, how the waste. And this group, you know, I know that they haven't had a budget increase in quite a while, and you know, yet they're still managing to make it work. So hopefully we can do something to help them get the additional monies that they may need in the future. Let's hope so. Because if mosquitoes and other vector-borne, you know, things that carry disease start to run rampant in New Jersey, then you're going to really hear people complaining.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and Missy over there playing with a rubber band. Do you have any anything else you would like to say?
No.
No? No? How did you like being on the radio?
I very much like it.
You very much liked it? So what are you going to tell them at school tomorrow?
That I was on the radio.
All right.
How about you, Vince? Did you like it?
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
You're not falling asleep over there?
No.
No? All right. Let me look at our time and see if we've run out. Oh, I think we have 1 minute. Any last minute things you want to say about bugs? And we didn't even get to talk about ants and silverfish.
Yeah. I say always, if residents have questions about any insects, we serve as sort of a clearinghouse for miscellaneous questions. So I always say, before you spend a ton of money trying to kill bugs, whatever, give us a call. We'll take you through the biology, what you might need to do. We've had a lot of people come in the Carpenter Ants. We see that this time of year. If nothing else, we'll be a third party to kind of give you a sense of what you might want to consider, what you consider before you end up breaking your budget trying to kill something that may not.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So do they call the county health department? Who is it that they actually call?
Well, often people call phone calls are directed to me, Todd Graney, okay, or Gary Donato at the mosquito program. Often we work in concert with our Rutgers Extension folks, Rebecca Magrin.
Okay.
And she tends to take on the insects that feed on crops and that kind of thing. I tend to take on the ones that affect either structural, we call them structural pests like carpenter ants, termites, okay, that kind of thing, or things that cause medical problems, mosquitoes, bed, okay, bugs, or otherwise. But yeah, feel free, and we can always, if you find something unusual like this tick, as a good
bring
example, if we don't know what it is, we will find an answer. In this case, it was a big deal. Some cases, it's nothing.
Yeah.
But don't hesitate to bring samples by if you have them.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming in today, and thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You guys were wonderful. This is Healthy Hunterdon, and we'll see you next month.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families.